7:30 a.m., GRUEN, Gruen Precision Watch Time. See the Gruen Curvex, WEAF, New York.
Wednesday morning, June 7th, and this is Don Goddard with your morning news, brought to you by Sweetheart Soap, the soap that agrees with your skin. It takes time to prove the worth of most things, and Sweetheart Soap has stood the test of time. For nearly half a century, fragrant Sweetheart Soap has been famous for its purity and mildness, for its rich, velvety lather that agrees with even sensitive skins. The Battle of the Western Front has gone into its second day and its second stage now, settling down to the long, hard pull which lies ahead. The latest news bulletins tell of heavy reinforcements brought in by a train of gliders 50 miles long to bolster the Allied troops in the Cherbourg area of the peninsula. A 50-mile train of airships bearing fighting men, another of those fabulous armadas which have crossed the channel by sea and air in the last 36 hours. A late German news dispatch broadcast by DNB, the German news agency, said that, quote, Allied troops have made contact now with German tactical reserves. This was the first communique issued from the headquarters of Field Marshal von Rundstedt, the German commander in western France. It's also the first news dispatch direct from the field to come to us from German sources. And here's another, on the battle in Normandy. The DNB says the German high command, which waited during the first day to see how the enemy plan would materialize, has now given its orders. Well, that's the Nazi way of putting it. New large groups of planes roared out over the Dover Strait to lend weight of their authority to the Battle of the Western Front early this morning, and a communique from the headquarters of the Supreme Allied Command says that the French campaign is progressing satisfactorily. The Germans say that they've launched fierce counterattack against Allied invasion troops east of Cherbourg. The Allied communique reveals that the Allies are now complete masters of the short sea route as well as the air route over the channel. Says the communique, no further attempt has been made by the Germans to interfere with our seaborne landings. Those coastal batteries still in action are being bombarded by Allied warships. The communique adds that at twilight yesterday, and for the fourth time during that day, Allied heavy bombers attacked rail communications and bridges in the general battle area against increased air opposition by the Germans. This increased air opposition cost the Germans dearly, however. 26 of their fighter planes were shot out of the air. The Allies lost one bombing plane, 17 fighters. In one instance, the German aircraft tried to strafe Allied forces on the beach, but Allied air superiority prevented them from carrying out their purpose. 12 German planes flew over the beachhead, and 4 of them were knocked down before they could turn their guns on the ground troops. The other 8 Nazi planes gave it up as a bad job. Allied airmen, meanwhile, were ranging over German troops and their motor transport, as well as installations. Rail centers, bridges, military buildings, communications were attacked at Abancourt, at Cerquay, at Amiens, and fighters and fighter bombers flew low to attack enemy units and motor truck columns behind the lines all up and down. From dawn to dusk, a vast Allied fighter force maintained vigil over our shipping and over the assault area, the communique says. And it's disclosed that the British dispatched more than 1,000 heavy bombers over the continental beachheads during the night, pouring a slipstream of explosives down on the Germans moving up to the front. In all, our planes flew the staggering number of 13,000 sorties over the new Western Front. 13,000 individual flights by bombers and fighter planes. That's 13,000 times what the Germans heard the scream and whine of planes dumping explosives down upon them. In the best days of the Mediterranean Air Force in Italy during the Italian campaign, the Allies seldom flew more than a couple thousand sorties in their best days. But in France yesterday, the number, 13,000. And I've just been listening to a broadcast here at NBC from one of our NBC reporters in London, from Stanley Richardson. Reporter Richardson went up to the big gray granite building which houses the SHAEF, the Supreme Allied Headquarters, early this morning. It's afternoon in London now, of course. And after he got a copy of the communique, reporter Richardson sat down, and he had a chat with a headquarters spokesman. And Richardson got some first-hand information on those landings yesterday, on the whole day yesterday, the kind of meaty information which is sometimes lacking from the dry bones of the official communiques. And here's the substance of what the headquarters spokesman had to say. And he knew, of course, that he was talking for publication, radio publication. He said that the naval phase of that battle is far from over, The Germans are expected to rush packs of submarines into the channel to prevent the free shuttling back and forth of our naval units and transports. However, he also disclosed that our Navy is still master of the channel and that the Navy has suffered no other casualties than those announced by President Roosevelt last night. That is, two destroyers and a tank landing ship. The headquarters spokesman told reporter Richardson that our troops did not walk ashore easily yesterday in all places, that they fought until midday to obtain possession of some of those beachheads. And he added that even though our bombardment knocked out some of the German coastal guns, the Nazis may be able to repair them quickly, or some of them. And this morning our bombardment is concentrated down the Somme Valley, east of Cherbourg, that is, our aerial bombardment. The German radio and the German news agencies are pouring out a vast amount of material this morning, and some of it may be true, and some of it may not be true. Allowing for exaggerations, one gets the same impression from the German report that the headquarters spokesman created, that this was no pushover, and that the Germans fought hard and will fight hard again. The Nazi radio says that German parachutists were used in combating Allied airborne troops even before they landed, that these Nazi parachutists dropped onto Allied gliders and set them afire, as well as shooting their occupants. Well, I wonder how that was done. It's the neatest trick of the week, if it was. The German Transocean Agency says this morning that heavy German reinforcements have been moved up east of Cherbourg and are engaging the Allies in fierce battle. The same news dispatch says that strong German formations of bombers attacked Allied warships and landing craft off the Bay of the Seine and the north and north of Le Havre. The German news dispatch says that details are purposely kept back. Very likely for the reason that there are no details, that no such thing ever happened, because all Allied sources are agreed this morning that the Allied naval units are as yet unmolested in their traffic across the channel, so much so that Sir Bertram Ramsay, the Allied naval commander himself, has just issued a statement saying that the convoy job being done by the Navy is 100% successful. Now, Sir Bertram Ramsay is a conservative gentleman, and 100% means 100%, or maybe more, if he says so. And Sir Bertram goes on to say that the Allied High Command actually had anticipated heavy losses in crossing the channel. It expected to lose a possible 10% of their forces. As it is, all the transports got through, even if we did lose the two destroyers and the tank landing ship. If the Germans are able to concentrate submarines in the channel to any great extent, we may expect heavier losses, of course. And then there is always the weather, which must continue to be a source of worry to invasion chieftains. The weather today is typical English Channel weather, cold, blowy, and running a choppy sea. In fact, Virgil Pinkley, United Press man aboard one of the ships which has just crossed, says this in a news dispatch this morning. The channel winds are tossing us around like a cork in a barrel. And reporter Pinkley goes on to say that the elements are deadening the noise of Allied naval salvos and the crash of Allied blockbusters yonder. Yes, it's that cold and windy. Rain also fell for some hours during the night, and this morning temperatures were cool, down to 47 in some places, with a light northwesterly wind blowing at times, carrying more rain with it. Visibility had improved a little since dusk, and the clouds breaking in places were a little higher. Conditions generally were cheerless for this time of year, and the barometer dropped slightly again during the night. Just before General Sir Bernard Montgomery left for France, he received reporters at his home in England. A news dispatch has just disclosed, said General Montgomery, "I always get along well with Americans, and the American Army always gives me everything I want. And I want to do everything I can for them." "Why," said General Montgomery, "they gave me a new battle dress straight from New York, and it's the finest suit I ever had." Well, he showed what his battle dress was. An old pair of corduroy trousers, a gray sweater, and a beret. He was wearing this outfit, he said, because he expected a bit of roughhouse there on the beaches. The heaviest air raid of the war took place last night, and it got only a few paragraphs on the wire service this morning, so completely was the Battle of the Western Front as it faded the other news in the world picture. But Allied planes, RAF bombers in great force, the greatest force of this war, roared into Germany last night and slapped down a record load of blockbusters on Ludwigshafen in the Rhineland. We don't know how many planes as yet, nor how many tons of explosives. We just have that announcement from London that it was, in all probability, the greatest air blow ever struck at a German city. Here's another late news dispatch. Allied headquarters in Kandy in Ceylon says that the Japs in the Kohima area up in India have given up their Kohima campaign as a bad job. They're withdrawing their troops from Kohima. There are no other details in that brief communique as yet. One of the big questions of the day is, when will Russia open the first front again with all the flame and fury that already has scorched the medals off a score of German generals? Well, the answer seems to be at any moment now, at any hour. The German radio, looking apprehensively for the moment to the east, says that a strong Soviet offensive army has now taken battle stations along the lower Dniester River. And in the skies over that eastern front, the Nazis have once again seen the wings of American bombers flying out of our new bases on Russian soil. This time, our bombs fell on Galati in Romania at the mouth of the Danube River. There, they ruined the airfield. It was just a taste of the moment when they will strike in the offensive that will come from the east at any hour. Meanwhile, the Germans are letting up in their fighting in Iasi in Romania, where they've been launching preventive counterattacks against the Russians. The Russians record the fact that the Germans brought into battle yesterday noticeably smaller forces of tanks and infantry. One wonders whether this front is beginning to feel the demands of the Western defenses, where Hitler has rushed with his Ouija board. It may be a little too early to call that German retreat in Italy a rout, but it has many of the aspects of headlong flight at that. Our headquarters in Naples this morning tells of exuberant Allied armies chasing the Germans to points 10 miles north of Rome. It tells of broken German units trying to form battle groups for desperate delaying actions. And General Sir Harold Alexander, Allied commander in Italy, in a radio address to the Italian people this morning, declared that in less than a month, the strength of the German armies in Italy has been broken. The general, pointing to the Nazis in full flight toward the Alps, called on all Italian patriots to arise together against the common foe. His speech might also be regarded as a signal to the guerrillas along the German route to open up, the marshaling call to the Italian underground. They can help, Alexander pointed out, by harassing the disorganized groups of von Kesseling as they make for Germany. Alexander expressed the belief that the German generals are earnestly trying to disengage their armies there in Italy from the fury of the avenging 5th and 8th armies of the Allies. The Nazis are fighting with more sharpness in the mountains of eastern Italy against the British of the 8th than they are on the western side against the 5th. The 5th is now in the vicinity of Lake Bracciano, 10 miles north of Rome. Ahead of them roar our plains. The nation of Portugal today has become the first nation among the neutrals of Europe to give full compliance to the Allies by stopping aid to Germany. Portugal has shut off all her shipments of wolfram, the ore that is used to harden steel. Portugal is the largest supplier of the ore, and her embargo alone will be a vital blow at Germany's war machine. In the words of our own Secretary of State, it should prove an important factor in shortening this war. Spain and Turkey already had curtailed the shipment of war-vital metals to Hitler. I have no way of knowing whether this story is true, but considering the central figure in it and his characteristics, it is easy to believe. Besides, it's vouched for by a reliable newsman from Australia. The story says that this man wanted to go along on the invasion, to ride in an invasion craft and set his foot down on the shore of France with the first wave. Now, this man is a civilian, and it took some fast talking by some big men to dissuade him. They pointed out in anxious argument that his presence in a landing barge with the uniformed men would make them all feel responsible for him, that they would have to take extra precautions, that he might impede their movements. Their arguments won. The man decided to stay at home and get his news through the usual channels. The man who wanted to go was Winston Churchill. Here's a message from the makers of Sweetheart Soap. Today, more than ever, you'll want to back the attack. And so, no matter what your war bond quota has been in the past, buy at least one more bond today. Dig down till it hurts. Make these invasion days your responsibility, too. Buy at least one more war bond, and buy it now. Weather forecast for New York City and vicinity. Today, partly cloudy and moderately warm. Highest temperature, about 78 degrees. Tonight, fair and rather cool. The temperature right now at Radio City is 65 degrees. And a headline, heavy air and seaborne reinforcements are being landed on the French coast, and the Germans say that Allied troops are stabbing at the first German line of inner defense. This is Don Goddard saying good morning.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.